Velkommen til dette Inside Israel her fra Internasjonale Kristne Ambassade i Jerusalem. I dag får du møte Yoram Ettinger. Han er tidligere ambassadør og ansvarlig for kongressaker ved den israelske ambassade i Washington. Han er en ekspert på Midtøsten-konflikten. Organisasjonen Ship to Gaza samt flere politikere og en rekke samfunnsaktører har i lang tid hevdet at Israels maritime blokade av Gaza er ulovlig. Medlem av Stortingets presidentskap, SVs Akhtar Chaudhry, har utallige ganger hevdet nettopp dette. Nylig ble Palmer-rapporten fra FN offentliggjort. Den tar for seg Israels boring av Gaza-konvoien i 2010. Rapporten slår fast at Israels maritime blokade av Gaza er lovlig. Den samme konklusjonen presenterte professor emeritus i folkerett ved Uppsala universitet, Göran Lysén, i vårt TV-program for mai-juni. Når denne FN-rapporten avviser påstanden om ulovlig blokade, ville det være naturlig og på sin plass at statskanalen NRK ville gi dette skikkelig spalteplass. Det kan vi ikke si. Her får du se de 4 sekundene NRK Dagsrevyen viet denne saken fredag 2. september.
Ja, vi holder oss utenriks og skal til Tyrkia, som i dag utviste den israelske ambassadøren.
Bugün geldiğimiz nokta itibariyle İsrail kendisine
Tyrkia utviste i dag den israelske ambassadøren i protest mot angrepet på en hjelpekonvoi til Gaza i fjor. Bakgrunnen er en FN-rapport som slår fast at israelske soldater overreagerte da de bora det tyrkiske skipet Mavi Marmara. 9 personer ble drepne. Tyrkia reagerer også på at FN mener blokaden av Gaza er lovlig.
NRK har fått mye kritikk og vakt oppmerksomhet ut over landets grenser på grunn av sin ubalanserte dekning av Midtøsten-konflikten. Med slagside mot Israel. Dersom klippet vi nettopp så gjenspeiler statskanalens tilnærming til Midtøsten, ja, da kommer kritikken til å fortsette. Her i Norge trenger vi folkeopplysning om Israel og situasjonen i Midtøsten. For å møte dette behovet har vi som tidligere nevnt intervjuet ekspert på Midtøsten-konflikten, Yoram Ettinger. Welcome to this program, Yoram Ettinger.
Thank you.
It's very often speaking about the demographic threat against Israel. Is there a real threat in this question?
Anybody who claims that Jews are doomed to become a minority between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean is either dramatically mistaken or outrageously misleading. The fact is that at this point there is a Jewish majority of 66% in the combined area of Judea and Samaria, otherwise known as the West Bank, and the pre-67 Israel. But more importantly than being 66% Jewish majority, we should remember that in 1947 we were 33% minority. So we have gone a long way. More importantly, the actual number of Arabs in Judea Samaria is inflated by the Palestinians by 66% by including in their count also Palestinians who have been away for over a year. According to international standards, any Israeli or any Norwegian who is away from his home state for a year is deducted from the demographic count. There is one exception in the whole world. That's the Palestinian. They add it to their number. It's over 400,000 of that status. Then we also have the issue of 250,000 Arabs in Jerusalem who have Israeli identification cards. So they are counted by the Israelis as Israeli Arabs. But the Palestinians count them as West Bank Arabs, and therefore they are doubly counted. one time as Palestinians and one time as Israeli Arabs, that's additional 250,000 that must be deducted. And then we also found in our research, which is already 6 years, a major gap between the number of births claimed by the Palestinian Authority on one hand and the actual documentation of birth by the Palestinian Ministry of Health, by the Palestinian Ministry of Education, and the Palestinian Election Commission. All of them show much lower number of births, roughly 30 to 60,000 a year, which have never been documented. You add everything together, there are 1 million Arabs which are added to the real count of West Bankers. And last and not least, during the last 20 years, due to very successful integration by Arabs into the different infrastructures in Israel, education, health, finance, agriculture, politics, culture, art, sports, there has also been integration demographically. Arabs have come down very close to European fertility rate. We have seen at the same time Jews are coming up, surging in the strongest way anywhere in the Western world. Today, Jewish fertility, number of Jewish babies per woman, is higher than most of the Arab world. In Israel, it's close to 3 babies per woman, 2.9 something. In Egypt, less than 2.5. In Jordan, 2.8. In North Africa, 1.9. In the Persian Gulf states, 2.5. So when you combine everything together, demographically, there is room for optimism. There is no room for refuted fatalism.
When the Western world is handling the Middle East conflict and the whole Middle East situation, they'll look at the conflict between the Palestinian and Israel as the main focus. What's your comment to that?
Well, the Palestinian issue has never been a centerpiece of Middle East politics or the Arab-Israeli conflict. For instance, the first Arab-Israeli war, 1948-49, which we call War of Independence, was concluded with Iraq occupying Samaria, northern West Bank. They didn't transfer it to the Palestinians. They transferred it to the Jordanians. Jordan occupied at the end of the war Judea, southern West Bank. They didn't transfer it to the Palestinians. They annexed it. Egypt occupied Gaza. They didn't transfer it to the Palestinians. They occupied it. And in fact, when the Palestinians wanted to establish a government in exile, the Arab League met and they declared that government nil and void. Moreover, when it comes to Arab policy, not only hasn't the Palestinian issue been the centerpiece of Arab policy, but Arabs are very, very concerned about Palestinian impact on stability in their own country. And the reason is because in the 1950s, Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, and Arafat were expelled from Egypt because of their subversive activities. They found refuge in Syria. By 1966, they got involved in subversion inside Syria, for which they were expelled from Syria. Jordan gave them asylum. By 1970, they tried to topple the regime in Amman, for which King Hussein reacted in what we call Black September, and the PLO, under the leadership of Arafat, later on Abu Mazen, was expelled to Lebanon. In Lebanon, it took them 2-3 years, and they plundered and raped, literally speaking, southern Lebanon, and then they moved into Beirut. By 75, they tried to topple the government in Beirut, which triggered the Syrian invasion into Lebanon, which produced the Black June, another defeat by the PLO, in the hands of Arabs. And the latest chapter of PLO treachery or PLO subversion against Arab regime took place in Kuwait. Kuwait was the country which gave Arafat and Abu Mazen and their friends asylum throughout the years after the 1950s. They allowed them to bring to Kuwait 300,000 of PLO members and supporters and relatives. But in August of 1990, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, the invasion was spearheaded by the PLO. PLO unit stationed in Iraq led the invasion of Kuwait. That was the reason when Sheikh Sabah of Kuwait was reinstated by the Americans, the first thing he did, he expelled from Kuwait 300,000 Palestinians, and that's the reason when the Arab League met in April of 2010 in Tripoli, Libya, to discuss the issue of Jerusalem, when Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, got up and started speaking, most Persian Gulf leaders left the hall. They still remember and they don't forgive. Last and not least, the assumption that the PLO somehow is a centerpiece of Middle Eastern affairs. We just had turmoil in Tunisia, nothing to do with the Palestinian issue. We just had change of policy the last 8 years or so in Turkey, from pro-Western to very, very Islamic regime, nothing to do with the Palestinians. In Iraq, there is terrorism. In Afghanistan, nothing to do with the Palestinians. We have problems in Egypt on the eve of the departure of Mubarak from Egypt. And once again, the agitation has nothing to do with the Palestinians. The bottom line is that the Palestinian issue has never shaped Middle Eastern politics, has never triggered the Arab-Israeli war. In fact, it hasn't been the cause for anti-Western Islamic terrorism. And you can see that, for instance, I would say classically, back in 1983, when 300 U.S. Marine soldiers were murdered by Muslim Shiite terrorists collaborating with Palestinian terrorists, by the way. In 1983, when the Americans were in Beirut, they were there to protect the PLO from the Israeli hot pursuit of the first war in Lebanon. American tanks stopped the Israelis. American soldiers intervened on behalf of the PLO. But that was the time when Muslim terrorists chose to murder 300 Americans, because it has nothing to do with Israel. It has nothing to do with Israeli policy, with the Palestinian issue. It has had nothing to do with even the existence of the Jewish state.
What do you believe is the reason for why the Western world is putting the Palestinian issue so high?
Well, I would say primarily because of oversimplification. There is a systematic flawed Western policy in the Middle East. And those flaws, those dramatic errors by the West, have been the result of fundamental misunderstanding of what the Middle East has been all about. Give you just few examples. Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait. Until the day of the invasion, the Western world supported Saddam Hussein, and the Western world referred to Saddam Hussein as a constructive leader, and the Europeans and the Americans exported to Saddam Hussein very sensitive security systems which enabled, facilitated the invasion of Kuwait, provided Saddam with billions of dollars of loans, all of which collapsed upon the invasion of Kuwait, which should not have surprised anybody because the writing was on the wall. But for those who are enmeshed with wishful thinking, you take Khomeini, when Khomeini was in exile in Paris, he was courted by the entire Western world. And Western leaders spoke about the old man in exile in Paris and about the cruel, vicious Shah of Iran who rules with an iron fist. He rules Iran. And they ushered in the Khomeini regime and they facilitated stabbing the Shah in the back because the Shah was very, very pro-Western leader. And the day after, the Western world woke up to witness that Khomeini became the number one enemy of the West. And certainly with the Oslo process, together with a very mistaken Israeli government, the entire Western world cherished and in fact worshipped Arafat as a prophet of peace, as a messenger of peace. And Arafat received the Nobel Prize in Oslo for his contribution to peace, only to wake up again the following day to find out that that Oslo process and that Nobel Prize to Arafat in fact facilitated the development of an unprecedented hate education, which was established, by the way, by Mahmoud Abbas, by Abu Mazen, then the deputy of Arafat, only to find out that the person who received the Nobel Prize by Western societies, by West Europe, by people who cherish Western liberal ideas, they gave a Nobel Prize to an arch terrorist, which later on everybody realized the guy is a systematic violator of all commitments, as he was Arafat, as is today his deputy Abu Mazen. But again, that's another example of the oversimplification by the Western world. And certainly, being so overly simplified, one wants to believe that resolution of conflicts is very, very easy. If you only yield and concede, the other side appreciates it. It doesn't always happen in Western societies. It never happens in third world societies. And in the Middle East, when you concede, you exhibit weakness and you only whet the appetite of the adversary to radicalize terrorism and radicalize demands, which leads to further war. And the proof is with the Oslo process. Never has a so-called political process, peace process, produced so much terrorism, so much hate education, and so much bloodshed, driving us farther and farther from peace, instead of the original aim, which was to produce peace.
What do you believe is the aim for the leadership of the Palestinians?
Well, the aim is very obvious. If you follow their education, the education since settling in the West Bank and Gaza has been hate education, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-Western, specifically anti-American. I firmly believe that that which we share with our children, that which we educate our children, reflects most authentically who we are and what is our real goal, real vision. Hate education is the vision of the Palestinian Authority, Abu Mazen and his colleagues. Moreover, you can read their so-called mandate, the covenant of the PLO, which specifically does detail the vision, and that is the elimination of the Jewish state. Moreover, you can find out the notion of the claim of return. The Palestinians have a claim of return, not returning to the West Bank and not return to Gaza, but return to the coastal plain of Israel, to the Galilee, to the Negev. That claim of return is the inner philosophical truth of the Palestinian movement. The bottom line, we're not talking about a conflict over the size of the Jewish state. This is a conflict over the existence of the Jewish state. And our neighbors, and specifically the Palestinians, never accepted the existence of a Jewish state, which, by the way, is not something which is reserved only to the Jewish state, because Islam fundamentally does not tolerate sovereign existence of any non-Muslim entity in what they call the abode of Islam. And as far as they are concerned, the Middle East is supposed to be the abode of Islam. Therefore, Christians are oppressed in Egypt. Therefore, Christians hardly left in Iraq because they ran away. Therefore, the Saudis don't allow any worship other than the worship of Islam. And by the way, the abode of Islam extends beyond the Middle East. Right now, we have more than 1,000 relatively new mosques in Granada, in Spain, because according to Islam, not radical Islam, according to Islam, mainstream Islam, Spain is part of the abode of Islam. The Muslim ruled Spain until the 15th century. The real claim of return is not to Palestine. The real claim of return is to Europe. And we have seen it in Spain, especially in southern France, in parts of Italy, and gradually all over Europe. And therefore, as far as Israel is concerned, we are the canary in the coal mine. If people in Europe want to understand what is in store for them, as far as Muslims is concerned, watch the way Muslims treat the Jewish state. That's exactly what is reserved for Europe when and if the Muslims have a chance.
Hei, mitt navn Erik Selle. Jeg jobber i den internasjonale kristne ambassade i Jerusalem, og jeg vil gjerne invitere deg med på Israel-tur den 30. januar til den 6. februar 2012. Det blir en tematur spesialdesignet for deg som pastor, menighetsleder, kanskje leder av en Israel-gruppe eller ungdomsleder. Du vil møte mennesker i landet, du vil vandre i Jesu fotspor, du vil få fakta påfyll om det som skjer i Midtøsten. 7 kjappe dager, men velfylte i Israel. Kan du tenke deg noe bedre? Hjertelig velkommen.
Bli med på denne unike muligheten hvor det blir møter med troende jøder og arabere, samt jøder bosatt i Judea og Samaria. Ved siden av oppbyggende fellesskap blir det seminarer og foredrag. Prisen for turen er 11 500 kroner. For mer informasjon og påmelding, se kontaktinformasjon på skjermen. Da har vi kommet til veis ende i denne utgaven av Inside Israel, her fra Internasjonale Kristne Ambassade i Jerusalem. Jeg anbefaler deg å besøke vår webside som du finner på www.icej.no. Der kan du lese informasjon om kommende arrangementer, aktuelle kommentarer, og se våre TV-program når det måtte passe deg. Vi takker for følge. Gud velsigne deg.